Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-argument episode of SCOTUScast. I'm your host, Spencer Caron. On November 4th, 2020, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Fulton v. City of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. There were three questions before the court. The first was whether free exercise plaintiffs can only succeed by proving a particular type of discrimination claim, namely that the government would allow the same conduct by somebody who held different religious views, as two circuits have held, or whether courts must consider other evidence that a law is not neutral and generally applicable, as six circuits have held. Second was whether Employment Division v. Smith should be revisited. And third was whether the government violates the First Amendment by conditioning a religious agency's ability to participate in the foster care system on taking actions and making statements that directly contradict the agency's religious beliefs. Mark Rienzi joins us today to discuss this case's oral arguments. Mr. Rienzi is president of the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty and professor in law. Mr. Rienzi is president of the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty and professor of law and co-director of the Center for Religious Liberty at the Catholic University of America, Columbus School of Law.
Yesterday, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Fulton v. City of Philadelphia. This is a case brought by three foster mothers, Sharon L. Fulton, Toni Sims Bush, and Cecilia Paul, although Ms. Paul passed away during the case. But three foster mothers and the Catholic foster agency that they work with, Catholic Social Services, against the City of Philadelphia. The case is over Philadelphia's decision to shut down all referrals of children to families that have been certified by Catholic Social Services. This is something that the city did in 2018, even though the city has had and still has a backlog of foster children in need of homes. The city said it needed to stop referring children to Catholic charities and it wouldn't contract with them any further because the Catholic agency, if a same-sex couple or an unmarried heterosexual couple came to the agency asking for a home study and approval to be foster parents, the Catholic agency would simply refer them to a different agency, would say, we're not the best people to do that home study for you because we have Catholic religious beliefs about sex and marriage. But here are the other ones you can go to. Because the agency wanted to make that kind of referral in 2018, Philadelphia took the draconian step of not only refusing to work with the agency anymore, but refusing to place children even in the homes of previously certified parents like Ms. Fulton, Ms. Sims Bush, and Ms. Paul. The petitioners lost the case in both the trial court and the Third Circuit Court of Appeals. Those courts ruled under Employment Division versus Smith that the Free Exercise Clause does not protect the agency or the foster mothers. They said that Philadelphia was just enforcing a neutral and generally applicable law, and that Smith would be a dead letter if the Free Exercise Clause allowed protection for the foster agency and the foster mothers. The Supreme Court granted cert on a couple different issues, principally one, whether the city's treatment of the agency and the foster mothers violated the Free Exercise Clause, and secondly, whether the court should revisit its decision in Employment Division versus Smith. There was also a compelled speech question that was granted on, but that didn't get much focus at the oral argument. So I'll focus on those two questions. The justices heard argument for almost 2 hours yesterday on this case. First, they heard from Lori Windham, my colleague, who was arguing on behalf of the foster mothers and the foster agency. our argument was as follows. First, that under any sensible reading of the Free Exercise Clause, it protects the right of a religious foster agency to continue helping foster children in need. That is a long and historic religious exercise. It was actually happening from the Catholic Church in Philadelphia for about at least 200 years, for many years before Philadelphia even got involved in the process, that Philadelphia did not have the right to come in, take over that area, and then kick out the religious practitioners who had been doing it previously, especially given the fact that Catholic Social Services has been doing this work for a long time in accordance with its religious beliefs and had never run into any problems, that had never generated any complaints. The justices repeatedly circled back to the fact that there was no evidence of even a single gay couple that had come to Catholic Charities asking for this kind of home study. And, you know, so you had the situation where the city was asking the Catholic Charities what was essentially a hypothetical question: what would you do if a gay couple wanted their home study done by the Catholic Church, which no gay couples had previously asked for? Catholic Charities said, well, if that happens, we would just politely refer them to one of the other 30 agencies in the city. But that wasn't good enough for the city of Philadelphia. So the argument from the foster agency and the foster mothers was that kicking them out of the foster program violates their rights under the Free Exercise Clause. That argument was both presented under Employment Division versus Smith, but then coupled with an argument that the court should also go ahead and get rid of Employment Division versus Smith. The argument that even under Employment Division versus Smith, this violates the Free Exercise Clause is that Philadelphia doesn't and never has had a neutral and generally applicable law in place. There was no neutral and generally applicable law that required Catholic Charities to do these home studies for each and every applicant or potential applicant who came in the door. There was no obligation to do that. That wasn't the previous requirement. And Philadelphia has all sorts of exceptions to the Fair Practices Ordinance that it said it was applying. And those exceptions include the fact that even though disability and marital status and race and other aspects, other traits are considered protected classes under that Fair Practices Ordinance, Philadelphia allows and encourages and at times itself engages in discrimination on all of those bases. And just to give a couple of examples, in the state law that governs home certifications, one of the characteristics that must be considered as a matter of state law is disability and particularly mental stability. Under Philadelphia's Fair Practices Ordinance, that wouldn't be permitted. But under state law, it must be done. Likewise, family status is something that when agencies are certifying a home as a good place to put children, they are supposed to give thought and attention to. If the Fair Practices Ordinance governed, they wouldn't be able to do that. Philadelphia also acknowledged that it considers race when making placements, which, of course, is something that the Fair Practices Ordinance generally wouldn't cover. As a threshold issue, all of those simply serve to confirm that the Fair Practices Ordinance never did and never was understood to cover foster care. Being certified to be a foster parent is not the equivalent of going to get a cup of coffee or a ticket on the train. It is by definition a process that is designed to treat people differently and require a lot of specialized and individualized decision-making. That's the way Philadelphia had always done it. But in the Smith discussion, what these exceptions indicated is that Philadelphia doesn't have an across-the-board no exceptions kind of policy that says you can't consider any of these traits. So the first argument was simply that under Philadelphia's law, as Philadelphia itself describes it, there are these exceptions. Philadelphia had also told the Supreme Court in an earlier filing that they had a waiver and exemption committee who could create exceptions. And the very contract provision that Philadelphia relied on in its argument to say that that Catholic Charities by contract couldn't make these referrals, that provision also allowed for individualized exemptions granted by the government. So under Employment Division Smart versus Smith, the argument was this is just not a neutral and generally applicable law. This has individualized exceptions. This has categorical exceptions. It's not generally applicable, and therefore strict scrutiny must apply. And particularly given that there are so many other agencies, and there's no indication that there were even any gay couples that wanted this service from the Catholic Church, the city couldn't come close to passing strict scrutiny. All of that discussion, though, also led to the second argument, which is that the, you know, applying the standards of Employment Division versus Smith, and this is something that I think much of the 2 hours of argument actually confirmed, applying the standards of Employment Division versus Smith is not nearly as simple and straightforward a test as the Justice Scalia's 1990 opinion in Smith suggested it might be, right? A lot of the reason for Smith, at least when it was originally written, was that this would give us a single, more administrable standard, and it's better than having judges figure everything out. One thing that 2 hours of argument yesterday really drove home is that figuring out exactly how to determine what counts as neutral and generally applicable can often be, you know, a rather detailed inquiry, and courts have different ways of thinking about which exemptions matter at which point. I'll give you an example of one that came up repeatedly at the argument yesterday was, you know, how and whether to think about exceptions that are at one stage of the foster process, say the child placement stage, and whether those make the law not of general applicability if someone's asking for an exception at a different stage, namely the home certification stage. Smith also allows laws to get strict scrutiny where they are not neutral, and that then leads to questions about looking at different statements from different governing authorities and so forth. So for the petitioners, we also presented the argument that all of this suggests that the court really should just get rid of Smith and go to an understanding of the free exercise clause that is grounded in the text, history, and traditions of that clause. The court has already done that in some places. It does it, for example, in the religious autonomy and church autonomy areas, as in the Our Lady of Guadalupe case last term. It does it where there is, you know, particularly clear discrimination against religion, as in Espinoza and Trinity Lutheran. But overall, the argument was simply that the Smith approach is not an easy administrable test, as the hours of argument yesterday kind of suggested. And also that Smith gives bad incentives to governments. Here you had Philadelphia, who had tried, I believe, six different versions of its rule going into yesterday's argument to try to find the right formula by which they'd be allowed to restrict religious exercise. And Smith, in some ways, creates the incentive to go do that. Smith tells governments that you can prohibit someone's religious exercise. You just got to come up with the right formula to do it. Philadelphia has kind of demonstrated over a couple of years now that as long as they're told there is a way that they can do it, they're going to go seek out that way. And if it takes a sixth or a seventh try, they may well try it. That's why grounding the free exercise clause more in the text and history and saying the free exercise clause simply says no prohibiting the free exercise of religion. And therefore, if there's a prohibition on someone's free exercise of religion, the main question that should be asked is, well, does the government have a particularly compelling reason to do that? Otherwise, the government shouldn't do it, and the government should find a different way. So that argument was presented by Ms. Windham. And since I'm her colleague, I'll just tell you in utterly objective terms that she was excellent and superb as she made that argument. Next up, Hasha Mupen argued for the federal government. The federal government took the position that this was a clear violation of Smith. They said that this law was not neutral and generally applicable because it has exceptions. They pointed out that Philadelphia had acted in a rather draconian manner. At one point, Mr. Mupen had a great line towards his closing, I believe, where he said, what the city's done here is worse than just cutting off its nose to spite its face. It's cutting off homes from children in need over what is really a hypothetical question. And that, you know, if we're going to have a serious commitment to pluralism, a serious commitment to a live and let live approach to the First Amendment, Philadelphia can't and shouldn't be allowed to do what it did. There was some questioning of Mr. Mupen about a variety of factors about, well, what impact would this have on the federal government's contracting rules, given that the federal government also contracts with a lot of entities to do all sorts of different work. And the answer was, I thought, quite telling, was, well, we're already subject to the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. And I think that's an important answer because it really shows that much of Philadelphia's arguments were of the slippery slope variety, that, well, we may not be able to govern and look at all these other places where a stronger free exercise clause could cause us problems if we had to face strict scrutiny. But the elephant in the room, so to speak, was the federal government. And the federal government is already subject to the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. It has been for 27 years. It does everything, or many of the things that Philadelphia does, just on a much bigger and broader scale. And that hasn't actually been any problem. In fact, it's been quite an administrable standard for the federal government. They don't seem to have any difficulty following it. And I think that, I think that that's an important point, particularly because administrability and the fear of that slippery slope was a lot of what motivated the original Smith decision. Congress, in many ways, has kind of run the experiments for us and given us the example of how this can work and how religious exemptions really don't lead to anarchy at all. It's really actually quite fine. Two lawyers presented argument on the side of the city, Neil Katyal for the city and Jeff Fisher for the ACLU as an intervener. They argued that Catholic Social Services was simply a contractor subject to the city's managerial authority, and that the city really only needed a reasonable reason, a rational reason for what it was doing. They were pressed on whether their theory would also allow the government to take over other private activities or previously private activities, such as hospitals, and do things like impose a requirement to provide abortions. And, at least when given the chance to say that their theory wouldn't let the government do things like privatize hospitals, Mr. Fisher, said that he thought they might be able to just do that. And I thought that was pretty telling in terms of where the government's argument goes here. If it's really the case that the government can take over activities that for a long time have been private religious activities and were done by religious groups for centuries, if the government can really take them over and then dictate rules that require people to violate their religion, and if the only test that gets applied there is essentially a rational basis test, that really is an argument for the government in whether it's the education area, the healthcare area, or here the foster care area. It really is an opportunity for the government to expand its reach and at the same time do it without any serious protection from the free exercise clause, at least as the city and the ACLU were pushing for. That does seem rather dramatic. A couple of key moments from the questioning. All of the justices, I believe all of the justices, at one time or another, let me back up and fix my comments on the fly. I shouldn't say all the justices. Let me start with with Justice Kagan, Justice Sotomayor, and Justice Breyer. Each of them at different points pushed the city or the ACLU on whether there was some compromise available or whether the city really is giving itself extra authority to create exemptions that hurts their argument. So Justice Kagan, for example, pressed Neil Katyal on the fact that the contract itself allows for exceptions. And she said that she understood Smith and Lukumi to say that if you do something like that, you should be subject to strict scrutiny. The city argued that while they haven't used that authority yet, and Justice Kagan said that she wasn't sure that they could get out of it quite that easily. Justice Breyer and Justice Sotomayor both openly pushed lawyers for the city and the ACLU on whether a compromise could be available here, given that Catholic Charities has done excellent work in this field for a long time, and given that they're perfectly willing to refer people. And, the city did not indicate any compromise that they would be willing to do other than having Catholic Charities do the certifications, but append a statement to them saying, even though we do this certification, we don't endorse same-sex marriage, which is something that Catholic Charities has said it wouldn't be able to do.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers. founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.